Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, are you a rebel reader? I know I am, but whether you are or not, we do invite you today to celebrate the freedom to read with us during Banned Books Week. We'll take a look at what's been banned and why. We'll ask, is censorship really about escaping the truth? And we'll find out from our guest expert why it's important to celebrate the freedom to read. My guest is Catherine Lord. She's Librarian Services Manager for the Southwest Cluster of King County Library System, or KCLS as we call it up here. She's been teaching intellectual freedom since 1999 at conferences and libraries across the country, as well as here at the University of Washington. In 2004, she was awarded Washington Library Association's President's Award for her work supporting the freedom of access in libraries. She's the author of Defending Access with Confidence, a practical workshop on intellectual freedom. And as you might guess, Catherine is a lifelong lover of banned books, public libraries, and the First Amendment. Catherine Lord, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Pleased to have you back here, you know, because I think every year, oh gosh, it's Banned Books Week. It goes by so quickly. It creeps up on us. But we did have you here in 2008. It just doesn't seem that long ago.
No, it doesn't.
So in 2008, I know there were about more than 400 books that were banned or challenged, as they say. And I read that this year, 2014, actually, for this 2015 celebration, that 311 were challenged, although many go unreported, I understand.
Well, yeah, that's true. Many of them they come across the desk at information desks around the country, and when people talk about banned book, often they're referring to challenged books, people who want books off the shelves. Very often in those discussions, though, people decide they're not going to challenge it. A lot of times people, when they think about it, they realize, you know, when I came in to talk about this, I didn't want it in the library, or I didn't want it accessible to children or whatever. But a lot of times in discussions, they change their minds.
Right. So, well, let's look at how that starts. What happens? A parent at a school complains they don't want the book in school, or somebody comes to the library and complains they don't think this book is appropriate. How do those books get challenged in the beginning?
Well, it depends. In a public library, there is usually a process. I know in the library systems that I've worked in, there's a process where if somebody challenges a book, they have the option to have it reviewed. It's usually embedded in your collection policies, and you can have it reviewed for, you know, appropriateness. But all of the books in our system are selected based on collection policy. So, you know, if it's something that is popular, if it's something that it's likely people are going to want to read, and it, you know, our collection is really built around diversity and inclusion of all ideas for a nation that's diverse. And so, generally speaking, when people challenge books, they've met those criteria when they were purchased.
Libraries, as I understand it, are pretty fierce about protecting our right to read, and pretty strong against censorship. Talk to us a little about that, if you would. I know you're very involved in that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, libraries are all about information. Libraries are all about the printed word and access to information. They're all about the freedom to read. Everything in libraries is really based on the First Amendment. In this country, we are, you know, every day we celebrate our freedom without whether we know it or not.
Right. I think we take it for granted.
Yeah, we do take it for granted, I think.
Especially the wealth of art that we have, the wealth of literature that we have. Mm-hmm. I do think we take that for granted.
Yeah, and it hasn't always been that way in this country, of course, that you know, there was a time when you couldn't get a copy of Lady Chatterley's Lover or Ulysses in the United States, but over the years, as courts have looked at challenges over and over again. They've ruled that people have that right, that the right to read is important as just as much as free expression. And the right to read and access information is a corollary to the right to speak.
Mm-hmm. So I know you said that as far as libraries are concerned, you have this set of collection policies. So if a book gets to you as a challenged book, you've already really gone through that process to decide this is okay to have. But what happens when somebody really insists? I did quite a bit of research on this over the weekend, and I was just shocked that the things that some people complain about.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Whatever happened to, you know, live and let live, people don't seem to come from that premise anymore, based on some of the challenges. But what happens, once they bring it to your attention, what's the process then that you have to go through?
The process is that there's a form, and pretty much that's true in any public library. You fill out a form, and then it goes on up the chain, and collection people look at it. I had this happen one time where it went all the way through, and they actually had records of, you know, the reviews that they had looked at when they purchased the material, and so they were able to really, I saw the process in action. They were able to formulate a response that shared all of that. But it's not often that it goes beyond that. Occasionally it does. I'll share a little story. When I first started in public libraries, there was a book, and it was very controversial at the time, and it was by Madonna. It was called Sex. Okay?
Of course.
And, yeah, you remember that book. not my cup of tea, but at any rate, the King County Library System chose to purchase copies of it, and the reason was that it was very popular at the time. People wanted it. People were asking for it. And our collection policy, again, it's about providing access to that information and the reading materials that people want. So
right. We
really felt as a system that we had to. But there was a lot of protest over that. There was a lot of protest. There was another time, actually, when I first started at the public libraries, where it was Playboy was on the shelves and people wanted...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Yeah. It was on the shelves. And again, a lot of people were asking for it. It was indexed. It was, you know, in the indexes that mm-hmm. we used at the time. And the library had to make that stance that we weren't going to be sequestering it where nobody could access it. Mm-hmm. And it was very controversial, and there were actually protests outside of the building.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So Banned Books Week, I guess, came about in 1982, I read, when mm-hmm. there was a sudden surge of challenged books. More than 11,300 books have been challenged since mm-hmm. then. That's a lot of books.
Yeah, there's a lot, and a lot that would surprise you.
Yes.
Some of my favorite books, of course,
yes,
are on that
and
list.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, mm-hmm. and when we come back, I want to look at some of, I've got a list of the top 10. I know you've got a list over there, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. we'll look at some of the books that are out there, because I was pleased to see Alexi Sherman mm-hmm. number one on there.
Yep.
Again,
yeah.
He's been on there a lot, I think, but he's number one this year. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue looking at banned books and what's out there and why they've been banned. You'll be surprised by what some of these have been banned. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Catherine Lord from KCLS. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Are there still lost cities waiting in the jungle to be discovered by explorers, fired only by the romantic lure of lost civilizations? The answer is yes. Filmmaker and National Geographic explorer Steve Elkins has done just that. For 22 years, he's been searching in the dense jungles of Honduras, Mosquitia region for a legendary white city. Join us Monday at noon for The Legend of the Monkey God on Conversations Live here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. It is Banned Books Week. Banned Books Week again. Yes, every September it comes up, and we are talking today with Catherine Lord. She's from KCLS. She's the Librarian Services Manager for the Southwest Cluster of King County Library System, and that's what we're doing today. We're talking banned books. We're celebrating the freedom to read. So in this segment, let's look at those, some of those, the top 10 most challenged books. And as I said, Seattle's Alexi Sherman is the proud number one spot. I'm guessing he's proud. It's probably selling books for him.
Well, actually, he said exactly that. He kind of laughingly said that, you know, it's great when these books are banned because it sells a lot of copies. Everybody wants to read them.
Right. So this one is called The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexi. So why did I say his name around the backwards before? But it's Sherman Alexi. Why was this banned?
Well, according to ALA, it was banned for several reasons. It was challenged, and in some school libraries it was banned. It was anti-family, they said, cultural insensitivity, drugs, alcohol, smoking, gambling, offensive language, sex education, sexually explicit, violence, unsuited for the age group. These are the reasons that were cited.
Right. Now, from a librarian's point of view, what's your take on that?
Well, from my take is that all of these things exist. And they're all a part of life. And we want to be reading these stories. We want to be reading stories about what people live and reality, and if we shield ourselves from these things, then we aren't doing a very good job of reflecting the world in our literature. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my take on it. From the library standpoint, if people want it, you put it on the shelves.
Right, right. So the number two most challenged is Persepolis.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that, if you would.
Yeah, the reasons for that, gambling. Offensive language, political viewpoint. And by the way, over the years, political viewpoint has often been the case for materials being challenged. And
political meaning they have a different opinion to me.
Yeah, right. yeah, exactly, right. Of the person challenging them, right. Maybe very controversial, right? Racially, and socially offensive, graphic depictions, yeah.
This is a graphic novel, right?
Well, yeah, it is a graphic,
graphic novel.
So you expect graphic.
And I read a little bit by the author. I'm not sure how to say her name. Is it Marjane Satrapi?
I don't know. I've always said Marjane, but then I think that's what happens when you're around the printed word a lot, is that you know things by how you sound them in your head.
Right. But I read that all she was trying to do with this story was tell what it was like growing up where she grew up.
Yeah. It's a beautiful novel. I mean, graphic novel, and you know that's what it does. And it's funny because I read it before it was challenged, or before I knew of its being challenged. And it was quite a while ago now. But it's funny, in reflection, it surprises me because I don't remember anything in that novel disturbing me in that way. It was just a beautiful kind of coming-of-age story. And yes, it was about growing awareness of her political surroundings, too. But, yeah.
Okay. All right. So number three, the most frequently challenged on that top 10 list is Untango. Makes three. Well, maybe it's because it's got the tango in it. Remember that film, The Last Tango in Paris, which cost all the... It's nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with that. And Tango Makes Three by Justin Richardson and Peter Parnell.
Yeah, and that one, it's cited as anti-family, homosexual... homosexuality, political viewpoint, religious viewpoint, unsuitable for age group, and it... And this is in quotes, it promotes the homosexual agenda. So,
Interesting perspective. Not quite sure how a book can do that, but there you go. Toni Morrison, this one's being challenged a lot. It's actually number four on the top 10 list, but it was challenged a lot. And a couple of her pieces have been The Bluest Eye.
Yeah, Toni Morrison has also been challenged for The Beloved as well in other years. But this is, she hits the top 10 very often in one or the other or both of her of these novels. But it's for sexual explicitness and unsuitability for age group. And again, the unsuitability for age group, that is really... It's such a judgment call. It's a judgment that people need to make for themselves.
Doesn't she write for adult, though?
She does write for adults primarily, but also young adults, teens. A lot of teens read her novels.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I have said this before on radio. I was 11 years old when my mother gave me the Carpetbaggers by Harold Robbins to read. I was sick in bed and I'd read all my books and I guess I was bugging her and she threw it up the stairs and said, tuck into that. So that was quite an education. Robie Harris comes in at number five with It's Perfectly Normal. So...
Yeah, this one has been on the top 10 a lot of times, and this is your common issue people take with sexuality, and it's a sex education book for young kids, and it alleges that one allegation is that it's child pornography, but it does depict nudity, and it's about sexuality for kids, so.
Right. Number six is Saga by Brian Vaughan and Fiona Staples. Again, anti-family nudity. That seems to come up a lot in them, sexually explicit and unsuited for age group. Number seven, this surprised me, The Kite Runner.
Yeah, it had to do with the language and some. There's violence in it as well. I want to share, too, with a lot of these challenges that ALA gets, a lot of them are in school libraries as well. And school libraries are also have First Amendment freedoms in them, but they do happen, it does happen more often in a little bit more often in school libraries that books are challenged and taken off the shelves.
Yeah. And ALA, you just referred to, that's the American Association of American Library Association.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you go to ala.org, there's a ton of information up there. It's a really good website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And also to bannedbooksweeks.org. There's a lot of information up there, too, about banned books. Okay, so number eight, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. How could that possibly be a challenge? I'm just judging on the title here.
Well, again, this is a book for teens, and it's written for teens, and it depicts things a lot of parents don't want their teens to know about, and we're talking drugs, alcohol, smoking, homosexuality, and then there's language and a date rape.
Right.
So yeah.
But you think that kids are going to get their hands on this stuff whether parents like it or not. I remember people bringing things to school. I went to an all-girls school that was very strict. Trust me, a lot of stuff came into that school that parents would not have liked. So it seems a little point in challenging it when they can just go to a bookstore and get it.
You know? Well, it seems to be kind of a rite of passage, I think, just about everybody I know. I mean, has gone through this. I do remember at 12 years old finding out about some books that had been banned, and my father had them on his bookshelves in the basement, some of them, and you know, Ulysses was one of them. And of course, I pulled that out. And as a 12-year-old, I couldn't understand the first thing about it. But right. I do remember reading parts aloud to my girlfriends. And
Right. This one really surprised me because, my gosh, this girl went through hell and back and probably still is and probably will for the rest of her life. J.C. Dugard, A Stolen Life. And this, of course, was the girl who was held captive for so many years. And her book was challenged. She wrote a book about it, and that's been challenged. For what reasons?
Well, again, it's drugs, alcohol, smoking, and you've got the language and the sexual explicitness.
But, I mean, she's this is nonfiction. This is not...
It doesn't matter. There are people.
So what happened to people just not picking up the book, you know? Just leave. Like with the television, if you don't like what's on TV, just turn it off or turn the channel.
Yeah. Well, Dave Pilkey, I don't know if you know him. He's the author of the Captain Underpants series, which is another very, very frequently challenged book. It makes it on this list as well sometimes, some years. But the Captain Underpants series is it's one that I remember my son was a reluctant reader, and it was one of the few books when he was young that he would read, and he read the whole series. And but what he says, this author, Dave Pilkey, says that instead of saying that book isn't suitable for other children to read, or I don't want other children to read this, you say, I don't want my children to read this. And the library will, of course, respect that. We applaud parents who take that responsibility for their kids.
Parental discretion.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, for me, I was hallelujah that my kid was reading. And so, you know, every parent is going to differ. Mm-hmm. And just like every reader is going to differ in what offends him or her.
Yeah. Right. So, and then number 10 on the list is drama. And again, the reasons on that, sexually explicit. Is that a fiction or nonfiction book?
You know, I don't know that book. Okay. I have to.
I'm not familiar with it. It's by Raina Telgemeier. Okay. So I know I don't have the next list, but I know you have some schools that are, some books that schools have actually banned. And my guest is Catherine Lorch, who's with KCLS, and we're talking about banned books. It's Banned Books Week this week. So do you want to kick off with some of those?
Yeah, and schools are, again, it's one of the areas where I think, anytime you've got kids, that's where people feel protective, not just of their own kids, but of other kids as well. And you know, so it's well-meaning, but it's also maybe not appropriate to be making those judgments for other kids. But this list is some of the books that have been challenged in Washington State schools. Scary Tales to Tell in the Dark by Alvin Schwartz. If anybody who's got kids, if they've gone through that scary story period of their life, this is a must read, must have.
Yeah, and banning it would just make it that much more appealing.
Yeah. It's Perfectly Normal, which we talked about earlier, about sexuality. And another one by Joanna Cole, Asking About Sex and Growing Up. And An Alphabet of Rotten Kids by David Elliott. And that one was, there was some violence in it, apparently. This is an interesting one, Arms and Armor by Michelle Byam. And it was challenged in Washington State School. I don't remember which school district it was, but it was for a violation of their no weapons policy.
Now, are the individual schools banning these books, or is it the school district?
It's generally going to be a school district that guides those kinds of decisions.
And do you have more on that list?
Well, there's Geography Club, which is Brent Hardinger, and the reason cited is promotes dangerous internet hookups. And
okay, well, I can't judge because I don't know what the book's about.
Well, I read that years ago, and I may be mistaking it with another one of his, but I didn't even remember the internet hookups. I thought it was about a high schooler who was kind of lonely, and he was making friends with.
Right.
But at any rate, yeah.
So. Maybe if some of these other books that were challenged, if their parents would allow them to read those books, they'd understand what's out there in the world, mm-hmm. and there wouldn't be any dangerous internet hookups
mm-hmm.
then.
Yeah.
So. Are we at the end of that list now?
Well, yeah. There are others, but those I happened to kind of pen those down before I came in here. Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about intellectual freedom, because I know you do a lot of work around that. What does that mean, per se?
Well, it's kind of, as the name implies, it's the freedom to think for yourself. And there are no thought police. And
not yet. They're working on it.
In libraries, it's about defending access to content. In libraries, we don't defend content itself. We are in a position where we make no judgment over materials and their content. And so libraries, and it's in our Library Bill of Rights as well. We have it's a code of ethics similar to what doctors have or lawyers with their codes of ethics. And it's that we defend access. We defend the freedom for people to explore ideas and information to their mm-hmm. heart's content.
Right. And so you teach this. Your book is about this, right?
Yeah, my book is about it, and it's also a guide for librarians. It's a training guide for how to teach this stuff as well. It's a very difficult position that librarians are in because, as I think, as a profession, we are a bunch of people pleasers, and we want everybody who comes across the desk to be happy. Well, when people come across the desk and they have something that they've seen in the library that offends them, mm-hmm. they're not happy. And that's difficult for librarians, of course, to deal with.
Right.
But we are mandated, really, not just by our own library policies, but really we're mandated by courts and court decisions over the years. And really, ultimately, we're mandated by the First Amendment to protect that right.
Well, that's good. That's mm-hmm. a good thing, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
We're going to take a very quick break. I'm talking with Catherine Lord from KCLS, and it's Banned Books Week. It's Banned Books Week all the way through to October 3rd. And we've just taken a look at some of those that made the top 10 list. And we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
And not the wrong. So listen up, y'all, to what we say. We won't be banned in the USA.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7000. 7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun. Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, are there still lost cities waiting in the jungle to be discovered by explorers, fired only by the romantic lure of lost civilizations? The answer is yes. Filmmaker and National Geographic explorer Steve Elkins has done just that. For 22 years, he's been searching in the dense jungles of Honduras' Mosquitia region for a legendary white city. Join us Monday at noon for The Legend of the Monkey God on Conversations Live here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Celebrate the freedom to read with Banned Books Week, September 27th through October 3rd. Find out more information at theamericanlibraryassociation.org, ALA.org, and bannedbooksweek.org.
Following the herd is fine until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. We are celebrating the freedom to read today. It is Banned Books Week. It started yesterday, September 27th. It's running through October 3rd. Lots of libraries have activities going on. Lots of bookstores are doing things. Certain schools are doing activities. So if you want to know more, one of the best places to go is ALA.org, ALA.org, that's the American Library Association, or go to bannedbooksweek.org, bannedbooksweek.org. And there's a list, there's hyperlinks there going out to what all the publishing houses are doing. I know HarperCollins is offering teaching resources for challenged and banned books. Macmillan Children's have discounts for their frequently banned books. Penguin and Penguin Classics host a giveaway of famous banned books. There's a whole ton of slew of stuff going on there. So just go to bannedbooksweek.org or to ALA.org and you can find the links that jump out to those. If you can't, shoot me an email at info@conversationslive.net and I'm happy to forward those to you. So I know a lot of educators are involved in this. And my guest, my special guest today is Catherine Lord. She is with KCLS, King County Library System. She's a librarian services manager. And she's an educator and expert in this whole subject. So I want to talk a little. Let's look at the list that you have of books that would surprise us that were banned. I was surprised by some on the top 10, but let's look at the other list you have here.
Well, of course, I'm surprised by almost all books that are,
right.
are removed from shelves or questioned. But one of them is Harry Potter, and I think, you know, many of your listeners probably will feel deeply a deep pain when they hear
that. Well, didn't that happen a lot out in the Midwest? Where in the wasn't
I don't mean to be disrespectful here, but wasn't it in the Bible Belt area where they thought there was sorcery and wizardry and it was anti-religion? And
it happens here, too. That it's
okay.
Yeah. It's, and religious views are very often a reason for people's taking offense at a book. Yeah. To Kill a Mockingbird?
Yeah. Now, why was that on the list? I seem to remember reading that somewhere, but I forget why it was on the...
Well, language is a part of it, and racism.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is interesting because it's been a while since I've read that book, and I've read that a few times, but, you know, he was a defender of justice, and the, you know, Atticus Finch is, you know, I would say is a very anti-racist character. So I was a little surprised by that.
Right, but, right. You know. I read the, there were three of John Grisham's that were banned. The Client, the Firm, oh, four actually. The Client, the Firm, the Pelican Brief, and A Time to Kill. And I read A Time to Kill about 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I guess the story is that he didn't have any success with that, but then he had success with The Firm and The Pelican Brief, and so they re-released A Time to Kill, and it became a big seller. So I read that about 20 years ago. I listened to it on CD about 3 weeks ago, and I must admit it was really hard to listen to.
Oh, tell me more. Why?
Well, there is a lot of, I mean, there's blatant ignorance in there. I think it's the ignorance that upsets me more than anything, how people can be so bigoted and so ignorant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously a lot of racist language in there because that's what the story was about. Mm-hmm. It was about that time, and it was about the rape of a 10-year-old girl, brutally, brutally raped. And maybe there's a difference between listening to it and reading it on the page. I don't know. But it was, I did find bits of it, you know, I kept thinking, oh, I wish you'd hurry up and skip through this bit.
Yeah. Huck Finn and The Adventures of Tom Sawyer have both been challenged and banned for that reason as well.
Mm-hmm.
In different parts. And you know, the language is definitely offensive in parts of the language, but it's also, you have to look at historical context.
Exactly. Exactly. I took British Lit at a class about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And the young girls in there were complaining that Shakespeare was sexist. Like, you know,
no doubt.
You have to put this in context, ladies. All right, sorry. Let's get back onto your list. We got off on a tangent there.
Well, one of my favorites, The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls. And again, that has to do with language and sexual explicitness.
Mm.
Yeah. 50 Shades of Grey may not surprise you.
I haven't read that. It's one of those books I read when I was about 12. So.
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
no,
stop.
Yeah,
stop,
that
stop.
Actually has made that on the list a number of times. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, you may recall there were some sexual scenes in that book.
Well, Maya Angelou had a very colorful history.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she did.
She did. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And that's why.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's such a, I mean, I know she's deceased now, but she's such a, such an icon, I think,
mm-hmm.
on so many levels.
Yeah.
All right. What else is on there?
Well, we've got The Color Purple by Alice Walker. And again, it's sexuality, but also the language. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And did I mention Catcher in the Rye?
Well, that one I'm not surprised at.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about that a bit, because I've honestly, I've never been able to read that book. I've tried several times, and it's one of those books I can just never get into. So why is it so controversial?
Well, it's partly language, and it's partly sexuality. But, you know, it's a coming-of-age story, and it does appeal to that age that's discovering about sexuality.
Right,
you know,
so. Right, right. Mm-hmm. And again, we have to put things in context, you know, because that was written quite a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you have more on that?
That's what I've got.
Okay. Well, very good. So let's go back to John Grisham stories I was just talking about. You know, the client, the firm, the Pelican Brief, and the Time to Kill. I was shocked that they were all on the they were all challenged. But I found this in an article that was titled "Censorship is Really About an Escape from the Truth." So I'd like to just look at that a little, and you know, get your perspective on how you see censorship, and then we can talk a bit about how it comes into play in ways that we may not think of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it is true that it is an escape from the truth. I mean, as I said earlier, all of these things are real. That the things that people object to, it's well, except for ghosts and goblins, there are people that object to that, which I'm not going to say that those are real, but that has to do with religious objections. But I think it's true that there are things that people either don't want to think about or face, and very often it's about the protection of kids. And there's nothing wrong with protecting a child's innocence, absolutely. And that's something that we all, as parents, mm-hmm. need to monitor and gauge when a child is ready for something. And every parent is going to take a different tack on that and approach it differently and find what's appropriate for their own kids.
Right. I think, you know, we assume there's not as much censorship as there mm-hmm. is. So you mentioned, you know, that this comes into play in ways that we may not think of. So mm-hmm. let's talk about that a little.
Well, very often when people come into libraries, into public libraries, for instance, a lot of times they're not asking that a book actually be removed from the shelves. There's other ways that things are censored, and one of them is that they'll ask for a book to be put in a different place, put away from the public shelves, maybe behind the desk where mm-hmm. people can't see it. And that is a form of censorship, because we are now putting the onus on the reader to ask for what he wants without anonymity. And it's really important. Confidentiality is really, really an important corollary also to the right to access information, because without that, it puts a chill on free speech and free access. Another way that people challenge materials is by having they want us to label them sometimes. Don't let this be in the children's area or the young adult area, because my child isn't ready for it, therefore other children shouldn't be either, and so put it in the adult area only. So that's a form of censorship.
Right.
Now,
right.
That isn't to say in public libraries we do have children's areas and teen areas, and we do definitely purchase materials that are written for kids at that age level, and that's where we place them. But we don't restrict access to kids that come into the library. That's up to the parents to decide.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Another way that people censor, and I've seen this many times in libraries, is that they will take sections of books out. They will tear pages out.
I've come across that myself mm-hmm. and wondered why those pages yeah. were missing.
Sometimes, and I've noticed in and this has happened in a couple libraries I've worked in the past, is that people will take a book, and this happens a lot in the books on sexuality, and they'll take those books and they'll put them into an area on physics or something where where somebody's less likely to find
right.
it.
Right.
And so that's another way. Sometimes people just out and out steal something, you know, then they will take it from the library so that others can't see it. Another way that people censor, and I'm sad to say this, but there is in history librarian censorship as well.
Mm.
And that often stems from political pressure. And so, for instance, if a book is challenged, I could see that somebody who didn't want to deal with that could be very tempted to pull it off of the shelves until the controversy goes away.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's something we would we would not, should not be doing.
Well, it's all very interesting, and we thank you for, you know, standing up for this. And because I know libraries, I love librarians, and, you know, every time I move to a new city, the first thing I do is go suss out my local library and get to know my local librarians, because they're always very helpful. I've never run into anyone who's not.
Oh, that's great to hear.
And final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, I would just say, check out a banned book. You're going to be surprised at how many of these banned books are going to enrich your life, and don't be shy.
And is KCLS doing anything in particular, or should people check out that
local
library?
We've got displays going on in different libraries, of course. You can come and see displays. I know that in one of the libraries I work in, Federal Way, this coming Saturday, October 3rd, at I think it's at 1:30, there's going to be a showing of Fahrenheit 451.
Oh, okay.
Which is another banned book.
Michael Moore, right? Or are you talking of the actual movie?
Ray Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury.
Book. Yeah,
okay,
which
Ray
ironically
Bradbury.
Is about firefighters who burn books. And that book was banned. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be at Federal Way Library on Saturday the 3rd.
Okay. Well, Catherine Lord, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and I thank you for coming in and sharing your expertise with us today.
My pleasure.
And I also thank Marcia, who helped set this up, thanks to King County Library System. You can find out more about banned books at bannedbooksweek.org and ALA.org. And, of course, I'm assuming at your website too, Marcia? Catherine?
I'm not sure. I haven't checked our website to see if we have the.
I checked it last week and I didn't see it. But anyway, you can check with your local librarian. Catherine Lord, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Take a quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
I'm free to do what I want any old time. I said I'm free. What I want any old time. I say, love me, hold me, love me, hold me, 'cause I'm free. Do what I want any old time.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Anti-Icky Poo, the product that gets the stink out, we cover the world of animals. This week, October 4th, it's Shelter, Rescue, Sanctuary, and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll check in with our regulars, birds, and horses. Welcome back, Aline Fortgang, to get an update on elephants, bamboo, and chai. More from Ananda Institute of Living Yoga, plus a surprise edition or two, all on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
If you'd like to advertise your business or service on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, or you'd like to become a program supporter by sponsoring one of our shows, please call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine a spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772 or email info@conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Remember, you're listening to Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we've been celebrating the freedom to read. This is Banned Books Week, and I hope you'll get out there and do some activities with your bookstores or schools or local libraries on banned books. And I have three giveaways here to give out before the end of today's show. So we'll take a quick look at those. The first is one of my favorite books. It's nonfiction. It is The Power of Habit. And it's Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. It's by Charles Duhigg. And it's out in paperback. And so I have a paperback version of this to give away. And Charles has been on the show a couple of times. I don't know if you remember him. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for the New York Times, and he contributes to the newspaper and magazine. One of his most popular magazine articles explored how Target the store, uses data to determine if shoppers are pregnant. There was a big hullabaloo about this on the news when this happened, when a parent received or saw that his daughter was receiving mail on baby wear, basically, and that's how come Target had marketed her, looked at her, what she was buying, and put together this marketing package, and that's how Dad found out his daughter was pregnant. But anyway, that's by the by. This was an article that Charles Duhigg wrote. And it was excerpted from this book, The Power of Habit. And he looks at the key to understanding and to breaking habit, to changing habit, is to understand habit. And so he's looked at the latest neuroscience. He's put together a really well-researched book. He talks about the craving of the brain and Starbucks and Starbucks' habit of success. I mean, he gives lots of really great examples in here. So whether you want this for personal or business use, it's a really well-researched book. Jim Collins, the author of Good to Great, calls it sharp, provocative, and useful. And David Allen, the best-selling author of Getting Things Done, calls it a great flat-out read. And it is. It's really well written. So that's called The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business. That's one we're giving away today. And if you're interested in receiving the book, what I'm going to do is say, we'll date stamp this, whether you email me or whether you call in, whoever is the second person to reach out on this book, The Power of Habit, is the one that we'll send the book to. So let me give you the 800 number. It's 495-7617, 800-495-7617. You can just leave your name and phone number there, or name and email and address, and we can get this out to the second person. Or info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. The other one, since we've talked about banned books today, and many of those books were challenged on the basis of religion, I thought this was kind of appropriate for us to give away today. It's called Faith, and it's essays from believers, agnostics, and atheists. And featured authors include Jacqueline Mitchard, Anne Perry, Pam Houston, David Corbett, Malachi McCourt. It's edited by Victoria Zackheim. And she's an author and editor of 5 anthologies. She's also a playwright. She writes documentary and feature films and teaches personal essay writing at the UCLA Extension Writers Program. And she's a 2010 San Francisco Library Laureate. So again, this book is called Faith. It's essays from believers, agnostics, and atheists. And people are just putting down their questions. I mean, you know, a lot of people like to read about other people's faith. If that's you, then this is a good book. It's called Faith. And the last one I have very quickly here, this author was a guest in the studio with us, I think it was last month, Meg Waite Clayton. She's a New York Times bestselling author. The book is called The Race for Paris. It's a number one New York Times, Christina Baker Klein, number one New York Times bestselling author, says it's riveting, it captures the texture and cadence of life in a world that is anything but ordinary. And I found the author of this very interesting to talk to. She's a retired attorney. I say retired, she's young. She didn't wait until retirement age. She has written this about, she did a lot of research on it. I think she said it took 10 years for this book to totally come together. It opens in Normandy on June 29th, 1944, and it's about two American female war correspondents on their quest to document and make history by covering the Allied liberation of Paris. And it follows the story of the young journalists. And, of course, there weren't many female correspondents in those days, especially war correspondents. And so there's a lot of history in here, but it's also there's a love twist in there. And it's also a very well-written book. And that's called The Race for Paris by Meg Waite Clayton. And again, if you'd like any of these books, you can submit email at info@conversationslive.net, or you can call 800-495-7617, and I'll take the second person to apply for one of these on all three books. All right, that brings us to the end of the show. We're rushing here because we're out of time, but I do thank you for being with us, and we'll be back next week with an all-live news show. You know where to find me, Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, also on Twitter @VickySt.Clair and conversationslive.net. Again, the 800 number, 495-7617. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.